Well, hello, guys, and welcome to Trapping Across America. My name is Chip Davis, and I'll be sitting in guest hosting Trapper Radio tonight. It is the end of March, and the trapping season in a lot of places is coming to a close, and I understand some of the northern guys still have some spring trapping upcoming. I talked to Jeff Dunlap a few days ago, and he kind of filled me in. They still got a month or two of that. I know some of these southern guys are still chasing some coyotes for the live market, and that's going on. I have cleaned my traps up personally. Unfortunately, I've actually just kind of been busy. We've got a new place and different things. I've been working on that. Plus, it's turkey season too, so I just kind of been snowed under, so I'm going to probably hang it up for the season. But and for the most part, that's kind of where most people around the country are, with some exception of the exception of a few pockets around the country. Clint, obviously, is not with us this evening. Clint, he finished his trapping up a week or so ago, and he took Cindy on a cruise, I think, and they're having a big time and enjoying themselves. They should be back not long after this podcast airs. And so, Clint, we're thinking about you, brother. We hope you guys had fun. I know you did. I know it's been a long-awaited, much-deserved trip to take a little break and kind of clear the cobwebs out, and hopefully you got your money's worth at that midnight buffet. So quite a bit different than chasing bobcats and beavers and coyotes, but everybody needs a break from time to time. That's something I think really, really important that we as trappers many times overlook, is that that need to give that attention to our families. Sometimes we get so busy and so focused and so stretched out that sometimes that gets overlooked. So Clint's really leading us in a great example there to, to always kind of make some time for what really matters most. All right, guys. Well, as you may have noticed, when I do the show, I, as of yet, hopefully that gets remedied here soon. But I don't have the intro, clips that usually airs at the front of Trapper Radio every week. So this week is no different. Hopefully, I'll have that audio file when I fill in for Clint. I can have that. That way, we get a chance to visit with our sponsors real quick. They're our sponsors, or who keeps Trapping Radio going. Guys, we just really appreciate you doing business with these folks. I just got to kind of read over them real quick because it is that important. Without these sponsorships, we would be really difficult to bring you all this information every single week, week in and week out. So our first and oldest sponsor of Trapping Radio is Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Oki and Jeb and those guys, Jeb owns this. They're large enough to get you a deal and small enough to give you the customer service that you need. Make sure you can check out their website at www.oktrapsupply.com. www.oktrapsupply.com. Also on the notes here, if you need big pans, hey, that's me. You can call Jeb and ask him about the Expanda pans. Expanda pans, go big or go home. Next sponsor is Wildlife Control Supplies. Proven solutions for wildlife control. If you're in the ADC business or even thinking about getting in the ADC business, Wildlife Control Supplies is a company that has what you're looking for, they're a proven and dependable company to work with. Check them out at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. Third sponsor tonight is F&T Fur Harvesters and Trading Posts. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. They are truly the Walmart of trap supplies, guys. Check out their website at www.fntpost.com. That's Foxtrot November Tango Post.com. Dunlap Lures, our next sponsor, is a hardcore trapper that puts his trap line to the experience in his lures and baits. Check out Dunlap Lures. Jeff's got some great products out there. I personally use them in some, and they're awesome baits and lures. So check out Jeff Dunlap and Dunlap Lures. Weeby Fur Handling Tools in Dakota Line. They're the home of Weeby Fur Handling Knives. They are high quality. That's something I also have personal experience with. I own a couple of these Weeby knives, and they are the bomb. Be sure to check them out and to enjoy your skinning and fleshing this year. Also, be sure to check out all the other trapping supplies they have at Dakota Line. And then this week's Predator Control Group's product of the week is the new portable pocket DVD. So that's something that is going to be the product of the week featured this week on Trapping Radio through Clint and Predator Control Group. Okay, guys, so that's just about got our sponsors kind of knocked out of the way, and we'll kind of get into tonight's show. This is episode 198, Trapping Radio 198. So, well, there's been a lot of these shows going on and out there. First thing I want to lead off with, guys, it's going to be kind of a little bit of a bounce around kind of show. I've got just almost no notes here. Usually I'll have some pretty detailed notes, but we got busy and the week caught us, and now hopefully we're able to get this in before the storms get here. You may hear some thundering right now. You may can hear this in the background. I don't know. But hopefully we get done before we lose electricity and storms. I'm in a metal building, so the audio may get a little bit less than desired if it starts storming like it has been. Boy, we've had some rain here lately. So before we get in the meat of the show, I want to bring your attention to a couple of things. Really, one in particular, the NTA, the National Trapper Association Southeast Regional, will be held April the 22nd and 23rd. That was right. You heard me right. April. This coming up. Basically this month when the show airs, it will be in Rainesville, Alabama. This is a different format from the last several years, guys. I understand that they used to have the regionals in the spring, and then not exactly sure the reason why. Maybe John Daniels could tell us. I'll try to think and ask him that at the Southeast this year. But they moved them out to the fall, and then people were kind of seeing some conflicts between the fall regionals and also the fall national conventions. So typically what happens, and hope I don't mess this up, I know there's a Western regional that happens every year. There's a Southeastern regional that happens every year. I think depending on where the nationals is, there may or may not be a Northeastern regional. And the reason that for these regionals is they'll these pockets of geographical areas, they try to have NTA, National Trappers Association, representation in each one of those. And sometimes it gets a little far to travel for like maybe some of the Western guys when, like, for instance, last year, the National was in Hamburg, New York. So it's a long ways to go if you live in Montana to get there. So that's the gist of the regionals. Anyway, this year they're bumping at least the Southeast back in the spring, and it will be April the 22nd and 23rd. So that's only about 21 or so days from now, for at least from when this podcast is going to air. I'll give you the location of this real quick. I'm just going to read this off because I did make a note about this. It's at the Northeast Alabama Agribusiness Center. The address there, if you want to type this into a GPS, is 1571 McCurdy Avenue North. That's in Rainesville, Alabama. Read that back in case you want to make a note. That's Northeast Alabama Agribusiness Center at 1571 McCurdy Avenue North in Rainesville, Alabama. And that's the Southeast National Trappers Association Regional. Guys, they also have a website there. Just type in Google National Trappers Association Southeastern or Southeast. I think that's all you got to do. National Trappers Association Southeast. And it'll give you a little synopsis as a website or a page devoted to that, to the show upcoming. And guys, the lineup is awesome. It is out of the park. I just kind of jotted a few of these down because this is really kind of opened my eyes on the people that are giving demos here, the demo lineup. This is, guys like Hal Sullivan, Rusty Johnson, my buddy from here in Mississippi, Marty Harmon, my other buddy and from New Mexico, Casey Payne, Brandon Johnson. Like, you guys may remember Brandon from the episodes of Trapper TV with Clint. Jay Lord's going to be there. Mark June's going to be there. Liesl's going to be there from up north. He's been on F&T show quite a bit. Kirk DeKalb. This lineup of demos is going to be extraordinary, guys. If you're anywhere close to in the southeastern states, it's pretty central located to the southeastern regional. This is right outside of Fort Payne, Alabama. If you want to look that up, Rainesville, Alabama. For me here in Mississippi, it's probably going to be about a, I don't know, probably roughly 5 hour drive, maybe a little less than that. I'm not sure. So that kind of give you a, you know, anybody, Georgia, Alabama, certainly Northern Florida, up in the Carolinas, Tennessee, you know, it's just going to be a centrally located, if you're in the southeast part of the United States, it'll be a really, really cool time, to come and hang out with like-minded people, with other trappers, you know, just come and enjoy yourself. The knowledge base that's there. Come and be a sponge, guys. You know, there'll be a lot of vendors there and a lot of stuff that you can buy if you want to. But if for nothing else, just come and learn. Just come and be a sponge and soak this information up. I mean, some of these guys are literally just bordering on legendary in our sport, and they're there to you know, to no extra charge after you get in there. They're there to share their information, share their knowledge that it took them scores of years to learn and put together. And that's why I always enjoy these. I always meet new friends. Every single show that I've ever been to, or convention, or whatever you want to call them, I've always met new guys. It's like-minded people. Everybody's there to help. Everybody's there open and honest. You know, this information did not used to flow as freely as it does now, but guys, it does, and I just really think this is a good, cool thing, you know, for, you know, do I agree with every single thing that I see presented at a demo or every single, no, I don't, but you know what, I try, there's something I can learn from every single person there, and I try to see that, and a lot of things that, you know, I'm challenged on, and that's really a good, healthy thing to be challenged on ideas, and, I believe anyway, and to kind of open your realm of thinking. And that's kind of where I want to get with to the show tonight. But before I get into the meat of it, and that's just kind of a teaser, yeah, I really do think, when I realized that Clint was going to be out of pocket and there's going to be a blank week here, I asked Clint if he needed me to do the show. He said, yeah, please do. And so I kind of got to thinking about what I was going to do it on. And I just got back to thinking, and I said, you know, I think I want to touch base on the one single greatest lesson I've learned from all the episodes of Trapper Radio that I've listened to personally. This is just me, but I think way more than what I've learned about trapping or about sets or about locations or about anything like that, I've learned the process of how to think. Now, that's all the teaser you get for right now, because I got a couple of questions, email questions, that I've had come across here lately that I get these you know, repeatedly, and I just thought this may be a really, really good venue to answer these questions, because I've had no less than maybe 50 people ask one of these questions especially, so I cover it. And while I was thinking along those lines, actually a customer of mine, Adam, he sent me an email last night and asked me a question that I thought would be kind of an interesting question to answer for him. Although this is not a question I get regularly, but this is one that I think may could help some other guys too. So I just thought I'd answer it here on Trapper Radio. This is not a commercial for Expandapan, but he is an Expandapan customer, and that's the reason that he sent me the email and asked me the questions. So, if I could find his email quickly, I should have had this pulled up so there's no dead air time, but where you at, Adam? There you are, right there. Okay, well, the first part says, hey man, I hope y'all blasted a turkey this morning. It was raining straight down Adam, did not have a chance to go, but without getting wet. But here's his question. He says, look, I'm having some really bad trouble with getting cuts, and he's meaning he's a coyote trapper. He's meaning cuts on coyote's feet. All of a sudden, he said, I'm running 550s and the Bridger number 3s with the big pans. I have no clue why all of a sudden this is happening. I've for the last several months, I've had no issues with cuts whatsoever, and now almost every coyote is cut. Okay, so, you know, I'm not exactly sure what Adam's got going on since then. We've actually talked, and I've asked him a few more questions. But this is kind of the way my mind went to this. Now, before we really just start tearing this pieces, tearing this two pieces, let me just kind of fill a few of you guys in that may or may not. A lot of you guys are old crusty trappers, and this is not new information. Some of the guys that are listening to this are still brand new, and they still still maybe don't understand all the terminology that we use. So I happen to know Adam. Adam lives in Mississippi like I do. We have a live market option down here that we can catch our coyotes in the live market sale. But we sell them to fox pens, and the pens that buy these are coyote pens. The pens that buy them, they don't want the coyotes to have cuts on their feet. They're using them to work with the hounds on, and the cuts are just a little bit taboo. So we try to take pains not to cut them at all. If you're trapping for fur, this is not nearly as big an issue, guys, as it is if you're live market trapping. Here again, it's all because of the buyers. If he's gonna get a 22, then it doesn't matter. Here again, we want to be ethical. We want to handle these animals as professionally and as humanely as we possibly can. But the kind of cuts that Adam's talking about, and the kind of cuts that I see many times, they are not hurting the animal at all. The animal is in no distress whatsoever. We just happen to put a small quarter inch or smaller nick on him, and that's what we're trying to avoid. So we go to great pains not to do that. You may have heard the most recent time I had an opportunity to hang out with you guys on Trapper Radio, I interviewed Casey Payne, and we talked about some hybrid traps that we were making together. Clint and I have talked about different things like that. Several other people I've had a chance to hang out with, always thinking of trying to think of new ways, better ways. How can we not have these cuts? Well, Adam's seeing something all of a sudden here that he's not seen before. All of a sudden, he's getting cuts. Now, I know Adam, and Adam traps year-round in Mississippi, and my first question to him was, hey, bud, how old are these traps now? And he's got some traps that are getting close to 2 years old. And I was thinking, just maybe because I kind of took this for granted, I four-coil all of my traps just because one of the keys to cuts on coyote's feet is the sawing action. If that trap is loose enough, even though the coyote cannot pull itself loose from it, cannot pull its foot out of the trap, it's holding tight enough there, sometimes the coyote can have a sawing action, can move his foot from the left side of the trap to the right side of the trap as he fights that trap. So that's where, in my opinion, a lot of your cuts come from, is that sawing action, that back and forth there. So what will cause that? Well, loose springs will. And so if his coil springs are getting older, and now there's another place that we ought to stop and examine, because what is old, a year old trap or 18 month old trap or even a 24 month old trap, by most guys' definition, is not an old trap at all. Fact of the matter, that's still pretty much brand new equipment. However, with Adam, he traps all the time. With most people, they may trap for 3 or 4 or 6 weeks out of the year, and then they clean their equipment up and they put it back in the trap shed, and they don't get it out again until the following fall when their 3 or 4 or 5 week season happens again. Well, if we've got 52 weeks in a year divided by, say, 6 weeks on trapping season, Adam has 8.67, almost 9 trapping seasons compared to other people when he's trapping year round. So if that makes sense, he's got much more age on his traps. So if his traps are 2 years old and you're comparing that wear and tear, and he's trapping with his year round, then that's the equivalent of almost 18 years of trapping. So those springs can certainly get worn. Worn more and more and more. So you need to be aware of those issues. And then what really became apparent as Adam and I talked and got further into this, Adam has only got his traps two coiled, which is fine when you got good strong springs. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's really, I think, what happened when all of a sudden two different, totally different brands of traps come out, or totally different models of traps, with the Bridger 3s that he's running and also the MB550s running. No soil change. Ooh, this lightning's getting close. No soil change there. That's something else that I ask him that you want to look at if you're having issues like that. You go from a clay-based soil type to a sandier-based soil type, you'll pick up cuts a lot quicker like that. But the telltale to me, though, is when he told me that he was all too coiled and was not forecoiled. Then I think that's what he's going to try. He called Jeb, actually, and he ordered some forecoil kits for two or three traps. My advice to him was try it on those two or three, set those two or three traps on your very best locations, continue to monitor your situation, and see if you got cuts on those cutters you get out of those few forecoils that you just tried and modified. If that does fix the problem, then you've got it figured out. Now you can go back and modify all the rest of them. So that's just something to kind of think about, guys, if you're starting to see issues. I know that example may not be the best example for everybody in the country because it's got a lot to do with live market, but at the same time, I think you can kind of draw some parallels there, even if you're beaver trapping or whatever. Keep your equipment in top-notch shape, and this is certainly the time to focus on that. Speaking of that, we are at the end of the seasons. It's so easy to stick these things in a pile and not look at this equipment till next year. If you take just a few hours, guys, clean the stuff up, take them to the quarter car wash and blow the mud off if you don't do anything else before you put these traps up. I know there's a lot of people, I've got friends of mine, I've even been guilty of this myself on several occasions. You know, you pull your traps, you come in, they lay in the back of your truck for 3 or 4 days, and I think I've got four laying in the back of my truck right now that have not been cleaned up with, so I'm preaching to the choir for sure on this. But clean these traps up, put them up, organize them. It's so much easier to find what you need next fall if you put these things up clean, organize them now. Now is also a great time to make any modifications. If you need to put expander pans on, if you need to add forecoil kits, if you need to add laminations, if you need to add one big thing that I've gone exclusively to, I didn't think it mattered much till it was proven to me that it does, shock springs on a coyote trap. Boy, did that make a big difference to me. So now's a great time to be making any of those modifications like that you think you need or do some experimenting with, if you need to do that too. So this is just the right time of the year to do that. Now, one more question before we kind of get to the meat of tonight's show too. And this is probably the most frequently asked question that Bailey and I at Expand a Pan get. And I just thought I would cover it. Well, I had a few minutes, have a little bit of a shorter kind of show tonight than what Clint usually puts together. But our number one question that we get from our customers after they buy our pans and they install them on their traps, we'll probably get a 30% return, not return, but a 30% question, follow-up questions, and it's this. What do you do to, after you have your trap bedded with the big pans, how do you cover them? And this is what people mean by that. And if you've ever looked on our website, our website is www.expandapantraps.com. That's where you'll find our products. And there's a tab there that's called the products tab. And there's a picture of all the trap pans we make, almost all of them. We've got several brand new ones out that I don't think have quite made had time to put on the website yet. Some treadle pans for some body grips are on there. Those are still yet to be put up. But anyway, I'm talking mainly about the foothold traps that we make our pans for and what we do. So I'm going to give you two or three solutions for this, and what we do ourselves is what I'm going to start with. I'm a peat moss guy. I was a peat moss guy before I went to the big pans even. So what I do, I've got a tool that I made. It basically looks a lot like a sifter. It's made out of expanded metal, the small, like quarter-inch diamond-plated expanded metal. That's what I made this thing out of. And I keep a 5-gallon bucket full of peat moss. It takes one of these little, this sifter-looking thing has no name. It's my little peat moss tool. It's about the size of an index card, maybe, on the bottom. And this thing's only maybe 2 inches tall. And so I'll grab, when I get on my knees to set the trap, dig my trap bed, and I usually set that sifter full of peat moss right there. So You know, this is maybe 3 by 5 by 2 inches tall, and that's all the peat moss I'm using. So I bed the trap completely solid, where it rock solid bed in there. The trap's not rocking or moving at all. You've got a great big huge expander pan, but you also have these small voids that have to be left in between the pan and the jaw. You've got to leave some tolerances there. Different traps are require different tolerances that must be left for the trap to fire right. We go through all that in our design process at Expand-A-Pan and make sure that those are all tolerances are all right where that trap will fire each and every single time, and the pan won't get in the way or impede that jaw from coming up or getting in the way. So we make sure we've got all that done, but that leaves a gap. Sometimes that gap is smaller than others, and when you sift dirt over there, depending on what your soil type is, that dirt can form little hills or little baby mountains right in those crevices, basically. And so that's the concern, and it's really a smart question. I know when people ask that, they're thinking, and so I love to field the question, I love to answer it. So what we do is I'll take that tool full of peat moss, I dump it right dead center square of the trap, boom. Nothing scientific, just grab it, turn it upside down right over the pan, boom. I've got a little trowel, a little garden trowel that, you know, like you dig flowers with. This thing is, I don't know, maybe 3 inches wide and maybe 6 inches long. I finish my digging my bed with that thing a lot of times. I use it for everything. But I'll take that and I'll just kind of start raking that peat moss back and forth over, and let that peat moss, because it's such a light, fluffy material that will not keep that pan from going down and firing the trap, I'll fill those voids. I don't care about if I cover the pan or not, or if I cover all the jaws. All I'm looking for is to build a bridge with peat moss in between the trap pan and the trap jaw. That's the only thing I'm looking for. We also have some voids we have to leave on solid levers, where you don't have wire levers on the side of the lever trap. You have to leave some for the levers to fire and close the jaws of the trap. Those are usually one of the bigger areas where I have to, you know, have to rake that peat moss into. And so that's the purpose of the peat moss when I use it with my expander pans, is solely to build the bridge. And once that bridge is built, now I may have some areas I'm looking at straight peat moss, some areas I'm looking at big wide areas of expander pan, but it's all pretty flat and it's all bridged where there's no deep depressions in there, no valleys in there, and I've got the bridge across those tolerance voids bridge. Then I will take my regular sifter with regular dirt, like I'm gonna blend in with a regular trap regardless. And what that'll do, especially if you're in some really heavy clay type soil, a dry clay is a great example of this. You sift it on there. If it rains on it, the clay won't run down in between these voids that I'm talking about. The problem is, as hard as some of this Mississippi clay is anyway, I'm not sure about other parts of the country, but when you get our kind of clay and you get that stuff wet, it's almost the consistency of Play-Doh, if you remember from when you were a kid. And the stuff, when it bakes in the sun, will bake into a brick. That's why you don't want that nasty stuff under your trap pan or getting where it can work under there. So it can't get under there because the peat moss is in its place. Then everything else is status quo, just as we normally do it after we bed the trap and after we build our peat moss bridge. It only takes literally just seconds to do what I'm talking about with peat moss. This, if you have any trouble understanding what I just explained, sometimes I don't do the best job, but maybe of explaining what it's in my crazy brain. But there, I do have a YouTube video up. This is something I've really become involved in more and more late in our trapping season this year. It's shooting a lot of YouTube videos and I'm putting it up there. It's all free content, guys. My YouTube channel is Expand-A-Pan. That's just it. Just plain Expand-A-Pan. No dashes on there. Just E-X-P-A-N-D space A space pan. If you want to look at some of those videos, I'd love for you to look on there. I'd love for you to subscribe to that YouTube channel. I'll eventually be linking all those videos back to my website. But right now, It's just so easy. Clint actually showed us how to do this in the business class. It's going great too. I'll touch on that here in a second. So since then, just a lot of really cool things, I think, that could be almost, a teaching moment or explain something to somebody that they may have seen or they may not have seen. If I see that, I can grab my phone. I can shoot that video real quick. I've had some customers of mine who have helped me fill in with this. Carl, my buddy from Memphis, the ADC guy with ACB Wildlife in Memphis, Tennessee. He has helped me tremendously shoot this video too. I've got several of his videos that he's shot for me, just using some of my products on there. So that's something that's, that Expand a Pan YouTube channel, there's a lot of information on there. And one of the videos that we did was exactly what I just got through describing, because it is such a frequently asked question, is how do we use our peat moss? Now, I told you there's a couple of other ways that that we go about it. One way is coffee filters. Usually this is best done, especially on a track with a loose jaw. Usually you would put your coffee filter, basically as you'd set the trap, you'd install your coffee filter right then. It's really tight. Make sure you watch your fingers. We got some great big pans and you got very little room to work. You don't want your finger accidentally hitting that pan and closing this trap on you. So be real careful if you go the coffee filter way. I know one of the guys in the Coyote Co-op, David, he uses coffee filters a lot on this. He slides those under the strong jaw, picks the loose jaw up, then beds his trap, lets the loose jaw still sticking up. His coffee filter is still over the pan, then he closes his loose jaw down on there. Now, there's no way that any dirt or debris can get in between his pan and his jaw because he's got the coffee filter basically going over the top of the pan. It's basically a pan cover that's only a coffee filter. So there's no need to have a wire screen pan cover because that's what your Expand a Pan is doing for you in the first place. But it is important to have some kind of cover, whether you use peat moss or coffee filters or whatever, and to keep the debris from filtering in between the pan and the jaws. So hopefully that helps. And then the last fix for that, and I'll cover that real quick, and that's something I played with some a couple of years ago. I really like the idea, and I'll tell you the pros and the cons, but I got a cheap roll of saran wrap just from Walmart. I think it cost 97 cents or something, but they got different brands, but clear wrap, cling wrap, I think is some of them they call them, but I call it saran wrap. I think that's a brand, but that's what we call it here. And I would set the trap, make sure the pan was level and all that, and I would completely wrap the entire trap, top, bottom, left, right, the whole thing, in about two wraps of saran wrap. Well, that stuff will kind of cling together on the bottom, and it works great for keeping debris from getting between your strong jaw, your jaws, and your pan, or any voids or where your springs work. Does not, the animal steps on the trap can fire right through that stuff. It doesn't impede that at all. I did not go to the pains of getting that stuff so tight. I just kind of had a loose coating on there, so when the trap fired, bam, it just fired. The saran wrap was not hurting anything, and it worked great except for one thing. I'm a coyote trapper, and when I'd catch a coyote, it'd have a ball of saran wrap around his foot, and they would go to work with their teeth on the saran wrap, and I'd have about 50,891 tiny pieces of shiny saran wrap in about a 50-yard circle, it seems like, around that set, or it's not that much, but it would literally get, I don't know how they could sling the stuff that far. I guess it's so light, the wind moves it, but it'd be 15 yards, in a circle around there. So a lot of the times when you catch a coyote, especially here where I trap and the conditions I trap in, if you catch one there, you can come back and catch his mate or his sibling or his parents or whatever the case may be in subsequent nights. So I didn't like destroying my locations because I did have shreds there. Plus, I just wasn't a big fan of littering. I'd try to pick that stuff up and it'd get next to impossible, but I didn't like having the plastic that was not biodegradable shred everywhere. So I kind of got away from that one, but also that may have an application if you're somewhere else that, that may be something to kind of keep in the back of your mind, that, and so maybe that'll help you. So there's three solutions that kind of we came up with for those issues. And so hopefully I hadn't been rambling too much, but now I want to shift gears. I'm going to stop and take a swallow of water. sorry about that. Had to wet my whistle there. So this is what I really want to get into on the meat of the show here and spend a little time going in there. Tonight's Trapper Radio show is Trapper Radio number 198. Clint will be back next week. I know he will. And so the following week will be episode 200. Out of 200 Trapping Radio episodes. And I do think I've listened to every single one, save the first couple that I could not find in the archives. And I have to pick at Clint about that. But the archives on the old Trapper Radio site has almost all of them listed, except maybe the first one, two, or three. But I think I have personally listened to all 198, save the first couple. Guys, if you think about that, these things usually run anywhere from, the shorter ones, 45 minutes, but not many 45-minute shows, to an hour, probably hour 15 minutes. I've listened to some hour and 45-minute shows that Clint really gets wound up, and I've listened to every single minute of every single episode. If you think about it, if that averages an hour and 15 minutes per show, that's 250 hours of free trapping information. And if that's not cool, I don't know what is. Guys, that is just, I am so appreciative to Clint for what he's done here with Trapper Radio. I've learned so much about trapping, about life, about it, just tons of different situations. Where I'm even kind of putting an exclamation point on that, because I have signed up for the business class. The business class was, we're getting to, we're probably not to the 50% mark yet on the business class, but we're past the 30% level here. And so he's getting kind of a little bit, I know we had somebody sign up new here a week or two ago. You'd have a good little bit of catching up, probably could do it if you really wanted to and you were disciplined, but it'll be coming up again, offered again. And guys, I cannot stress enough how much I've learned here. Just like Trapper Radio, but Trapper Radio on steroids. If you like business and you like business ideas and you like thinking and being challenged and just your eyes open, seriously, think about taking this business class the next time it comes around. Guys, this is just incredible how much I've learned. Words can't hardly even describe it. But not to do too much of a commercial for the business class, let's kind of get into here. So what I like about Trapper Radio, that's what I wanted to do tonight, show them. What, all that information, 250 hours plus or minus that Clint's put into this thing. I've had the privilege of hanging out with you guys when Clint's gone, just so that there's not a void in between weeks. I appreciate him letting me do that. I enjoy, talking to you about this stuff, learn stuff, even from doing these shows, the feedback to me. If you have comments or questions or whatever, you want to follow up after the show, look me up. My website's expandedpantraps.com, I've already said, but my email is on there. Shoot me an email. I'd love to, to follow up with guys, and a lot of guys have, and I appreciate that. So I love hearing from you. But that's still not, tons of, that's not my favorite thing about Trapper Radio. I like that. I like hanging out with the guys and all that, but it's not my favorite. Above anything, I've learned volumes about trapping on here, especially coyote trapping, which I've kind of gotten into. I've learned a ton just from listening to this very radio show. Clint's made things so crystal clear, precise. I just learned that. It would have taken me years to figure that out on my own, but he gave me shortcuts there. But even that is not my favorite thing about Trapping Radio. I've heard some great interviews. I've been fortunate enough to do some great interviews. The Wayne Derrick interviews comes to mind. That was just so special to me to be able to be a part of that. A David Gore interview that I did I learned a lot there. That was just a humbling experience. And some of these guys that are just, they would not say this and they'd get mad if I said it, but they're next to legends. They've been there. They've done that. They've caught tens of thousands of animals, and they've forgotten more about trapping than I'll probably ever learn. I've had a chance to be around these guys face to face and listening to them from my living room, just like they were face to face as Clint or me or whomever does the interview with them. And that's really, really a cool part of Trapping Radio. But that, guys, is not even my favorite part of trapping radio. My favorite part of trapping radio and what I've learned and my takeaway, number one takeaway, as much of the other things as I really, really like and I enjoy, trapping radio has changed my life and taught me how to think. That's a big statement. And I'm a big old redneck guy. And I like to think I'm in control of everything. But to some degree, this show has kind of humbled me a little bit. It's challenged me is maybe a better word. And I don't know if Clint has done this on purpose. And I just kind of think, because I've talked to a lot of guys at conventions and different things, I hear this echoed over and over and over again. I don't think I'm the only one that has been challenged by what the information that Clint typically presents. And it's really, I like that term, challenge, because it's, you know, are things what they always appear? Are things what you've always been taught they have to be? Does it have to be black or does it have to be white? Is there no room for a gray in there? You know, I've got some examples. That seems really, really broad, and it seems kind of hard to follow. And it is hard to follow. So the only way I know to explain this is to explain it with some examples. So I'm going to give you a couple of examples and that I went through. And a couple of them are going to be trapping related. And a couple of them are just going to be business related. Because I am a trapper. I love to trap. My passion is trapping. It's part of my life. It's part of who I am at my very, very core. But I'm also a business guy. I'm not a professional trapper in the way that Clint or Jeff Dunlap or Casey Payne or some of these other guys out there, Carl Hershider, a lot of these other guys, they're professional trappers. I don't make my soul living doing it. But I do love it. Absolutely eat it, breathe it, sleep it. It is part of, trapping is part of who I am. Some of these, I'm also into business a lot. That is what makes my living. And so I like to use the same mindset and kind of bridge the worlds there, bridge both of those gaps. Take it, you know, take what I learned in trapping, put that in the business world, take what I learned in business, put that in the trapping world, and basically kind of mesh those two. And that's kind of what I've become. And after I learned to really think on purpose, think open-mindedly. That's what I want to talk to you a little bit about. And I've got three or four examples that if we can get through this and give them. And so bear with me on the couple that are not business examples, but I think you'll enjoy these two. First, and I am going to start with a trapping example, and that's actually not the first one I got listed. So early on, when I was starting to listen to trapping radio and really become serious, Clint started preaching about these drags. I think Clint runs the drags from F&T, the Sabertooth drag. They're a really fine drag. They're, you know, well made. They've got the two spikes on the end. They're aggressive. I've got a few of them. I like them a lot. I was looking at those drags and I thought I saw a room for some improvement. I actually made my own drag. We call it the Ugly Drag. It's on our website. It's also, I've got some video of that Ugly Drag on our YouTube channel that I mentioned earlier too. You can watch those. They're absolutely free. But we make a really, really cool drag. Nothing at Sabertooth. Sabertooth is fine. They're you know, they're probably our closest competition. I think we're maybe a little bit more aggressive. But anyway, that's splitting hairs. But I went to drags, and I wanted to go to drags. I was beating stakes in. I was using earth anchors, and I was driving earth anchors at every single set. Very, very occasionally, if I had a good solid structure, I'd cable off to a, you know, to a pipe or to a, something very heavy. But most of the time, 98% of the time, I was driving earth anchors. And I drove so many earth anchors, I think it was 2 years ago, that I started developing some issues. I'm not the spring chicken that I used to be, and I started developing some issues with the big hammer I was swinging on my right elbow. It's I actually got so bad I'd never go to the doctor. This was hurting me so bad I couldn't hardly swing a hammer, and I said, I've got to have some relief. I went and I talked to my doc about it, and he said, it's tennis elbow. He said, it's what You know, it's repetitive action with your elbow, especially compounded when you put a weight on the end, like the hammer. And he said, well, are you building a house or something? I said, no. I said, but I drive these stakes from a trapping all the time. He said, well, that's it. He said, you gotta figure out something else. He said, you're going to damage this elbow to the point where it's not going to be repairable without surgery. And even with surgery, we may or may not be able to fix this thing back 100%. He said, you've got to find another way. Well, he knew nothing about trapping. And I'm thinking, what in the world could be my other way? And so I'm thinking, well, Clint's talking about these drags. And now I'm also kind of starting to learn how to think. And I'm starting to learn, you know, is what I always thought the answer was. I go set a trap, I drive a earth anchor. That's just what I do. That there's no other alternative. But when you got to really questioning that, maybe there is an alternative. And that's when we develop our drags. And that's when I've gone now, in the course of about 18 months, 100% of my trapping now is on a drag. And that may not be accurate. I'll say this, 98%+ of my trapping now is on a drag. Almost all of my trapping. I have completely gone and rigged up every single coyote trap I've got, save about a half a dozen on drags. And they're on. The only reason I've got those half a dozens is sometimes there's a reason I don't need to, but most of them all are. Now I will go on and tell you the problems with drags, and sometimes, especially where I trap in the Mississippi Delta, we're on huge wide open fields. It may be 1,500, 2,000, 3,000 acres in a field, and if you catch a coyote on an intersection on a dirt turn row and the closest bush is a quarter of a mile away, he's not going to get away from there, but you may have to hunt him for a while. One thing I've seen is I need a trap line dog. When I really get full bore back into coyote trapping like I like to and want to be, just didn't have a chance to trap a whole lot this year, but I did quite a bit. But still, if you're really hard charging, fire breathing like I like to be, and get lined out with 100, 150, 200 traps in the ground, you need a trap line dog if you're going to be in open country with the drags, because they will, they're going to get hung up when they get in stubble, when they get in anything that'll, you know, that drag will grab into, with a good drag anyway, a drag like mine or a drag like the Sabertooth, they're going to hang the animal up. Anytime around woods, I use them hands down, don't even think about it, but that's the downside, is open country, open ground, he's got to get to something that'll stop him. But he's not going to leave the country. As soon as he gets to some brush, he'll tangle up there. He'll be waiting on you. So I really, really like him there. So that's one little small example of just kind of using your head. And sometimes the obvious, or what we've always done, may not be the best solution to a problem. And so I'll go from there into more of a business one. And this is going to get a little bit personal. It's a little bit uncomfortable kind of talking about this. So, but I do want to give a stab at it because it is so important to me, and it's changed my very life. So about the time that I really kind of, it was actually not long before I changed to drags, I was looking at some business things. I made my living farming. Many of you know that. I still farm. Still how I make my living. But I was at the time farming about 3,500 acres of ground. Of that, I owned about 3,000, roughly speaking, and I rented from other landowners about 500. The part that I owned was in one location in the Delta, a part of our state, and the 500 that I rented was from other people, was in the hills section of our state. We were traveling about 30 or 45 miles between farms and trying to farm all that. And this is when I started hearing, Clint kind of challenging the status quo and say on these radio shows, like the radio show Trapped Like a Child, he said, does everything have to be like we always taught? Are we not free enough and wise enough to make our own decisions and think through these? And it hit me right square between the eyes, guys. I said, that's exactly right. And I looked at our environment. Our yields were staying status quo. Our costs were skyrocketing through the roof. And I'm seeing, at best, we're working our tail off. And at best, we're breaking even here. You know, I've got so many dollars that are passing through my hands. It's astounding. But what difference does it make if you borrow $3 million to make a crop, and at the end of the year, you make $3,010,000 back? You made $10,000 for the whole year. And I saw that happen two or three times. And I'm saying, like, where I'm spinning my wheels. I'm not going anywhere. And I took these lessons that Clint was teaching us through trapping, and I applied those to my very life. And I said, you know, at the same time, one of our huge inputs and one of our big things, there's actually a piece of property that came up that I was interested in renting, and I went to the bid. Oh, they were actually going to do this by sale bid, and I looked at the piece of property, and I said, I could probably make this and yield on it. Here's my cost to add it all this up. And I said, you know, I could probably pay about $75 an acre for rent on this. And that was my number. I wrote that down, assigned my name on it, filled out the sale bid, went to the bid letting. The place rented for over $200 an acre. I don't understand. I mean, the farmer cannot be making money. He's got other angles. He's spreading his cost out over, you know, a lot of times that's one of the ways people rationalize this. They spread equipment cost out and rent cost out. He may have some other stuff cheaper, and now you can average things together. And at any rate, they're paying some extraordinary rent. And I got to look, and I said, I'm making a living. But I'm not getting ahead. I'm not happy. It's a steady grind. My blood pressure is out the roof. I'm having first time in my life having to take medicine for that just to keep it under control. It's a strain on my family. I don't have time. I mean, countless Little League baseball games I could not go to. It broke my heart not to be able to go to, but I had to make a living because he would rather, as much as he wanted me to watch him pitch an inning in a Little League baseball game, he would much rather eat supper. And so I had to be at that farm, and I had to work, and I had to do this. Or at least I felt like I did. Well, my eyes were open. I'm already in this mindset of Clint's teaching me things don't have to be like they've always been taught to you. Open your mind. And I got to looking, well, this other land is written for extraordinary values. What if I rented out my farm that I own? And I got to doing the math. And I can make much more money by still owning my farm, still making the note on my farm just like I always had, but instead of renting it, letting somebody else rent it, let them write me a check up front. And I said, you know what? This is going to work. And I put it on the market. I put the word out there, and folks started calling me. I said, there's no way that, you know, I thought my farm was worth, you know, like any other farm I worked, that because I'd always approached it from the producer side. I've not approached it from, you know, a business side or thinking outside the box or thinking on purpose, and not approached it from, you know, from, hey, there may be a different solution. And so that's what I did. And this has been a couple of years ago. And so this actually started, this spring is the third year of a 3-year contract when I leased my farm out, and did way, way, way better than I had been doing when I was struggling. Now, am I farming? Still farming? Yeah, I am. Because early on, I've got this equipment that I've had for years, and you know, I try to replace some every now and again and try to keep this fleet of equipment up. So I don't want it sitting up not doing anything. Well, I still had this 500 in the neighboring county that's a long ways away. So I transitioned all this equipment there, and that's what I'm using. Some of this stuff I can sell, and some of this stuff I don't have to do. Well, it's escalated even from that to the point that our land values have really gone through the roof here as well. And recently I sold part of this farm. My mind is a little clearer, and I've got I can see things with a different eye because I'm not in this grind. It's constant every day. Got to do the same routine. I wanted out of that so bad, and I did with the rent. Well, after I had some fresh air there, and I can enjoy my 500 acres I'm doing. Imagine the stress load that came off of me when I went from 3,500 acres down to 500 acres. I mean, now I can take the boys fishing. I could never, you know, that was taboo before. You can't say that. I, you know, now I can spend time with my family. Now I got time to do this other, and I'm still doing the same thing, but actually way better financially. So it's, I don't know. I'm just trying to say, guys, is this happened because I learned how to think and learn how to think a lot because of this radio show. Well, you take that to the next step and the step further. Now that my head was clear, I could kind of take an objective look and I could kind of see. I still had this debt load on this farm. I still had a lot of debt and I'm still in debt a good bit. And I got to look and I said, you know, these land values are bringing a lot of money now, and I need to seriously take a look at selling part of what I own down here. And I did. I sold about 28%. That's it. I still own, you know, 72%. Is that right? Yeah, 72% of what I've always owned. I can still gonna rent this other out, but I had enough revenue raised in this sale of the 28% that I was able to pay completely out. I paid off my whole entire debt, and it was like a no-brainer. And I had to take the emotions out. And I had to be able to step back, and I had to be able to think clearly and make rational decisions and think on purpose. Because you don't get there, guys, by doing the same old every single day. And one of the things, and a lot of this, Clint blames on our says he learned these ideas through permaculture. For those of you that don't know, I did not know the first time I'd ever heard that term was from Clint. But permaculture is kind of a mindset. It uses, most of it's built around gardening and growing things, whether it be, you know, trees or garden plants or food forests or whatever. It's really an intriguing idea and concept that has a lot of merit and is really catching a fire across the country. It'd be something worth looking into. But what I'm more interested in is the lessons and that's kind of where Clint is coming from a lot. You'll hear him mention the permaculture a lot, but a lot of these mindsets, these principles are kind of permaculture principles, but they're also the principles that our grandparents live by, and maybe more of our great-grandparents, because I understand the average listenership to the show is kind of is getting younger, a lot younger than I am now, as far as age-wise, But it goes back to what maybe, you know, you younger fellas, what your great-grandparents, you know, that lived at the turn of the century or even the late 1800s, early 1900s and before the days of electricity. And it goes back to the common sense, practical approaches that they had. One of those principles is the problem is always in the solution. That is a principle I kind of want to go into a little bit. Also, and you'll hear Clint say this a ton, stacking functions. You know, if I've got one job to do, can I make that do two jobs? I've got to be open-minded. I've got to be clear-headed, and I've got to think on for the purpose of thinking, and I've got to look at the pros and the cons. And guys, I'm telling you, the more you do this, it becomes a system in your brain, and anymore with me, it becomes the very reason and the very methodology of how I do think. I mean, I can get up in the morning and walk to the kitchen, and my sweet wife can say, hey, what you want for breakfast? And I'm going through this I hate to call it permaculture because I'm not a permaculturist, but I go through this thinking on purpose mindset. I'm thinking, well, you know, if I could have cereal, but if I had this, then I need to do that. You know, and it doesn't quite go to that extreme, but it does. Any big problem, I do apply these on purpose thought processes and go through. I usually look at the best case scenarios. I usually look at the worst case scenarios. I usually look at can functions be stacked here? I can, you know, and it's allowed me to be so much more creative. I can be riding down the road and I can see something. When I sold part of my place here, the guys that bought my place, they also bought my house as a separate line item and my farm shop and all this. So I'm having to move the Expand-A-Pan headquarters from here to this new property. I actually went out and bought me a place in the hills. I'm going to build a new house on it and build a new shop. I've been working this very day a lot on trying to design the shop and trying to get a metal building erected here in the next few weeks so I can make this transition. But so what I've got on my mind right now is a lot of construction type things and clearing lots and all this. And I may ride down the road and I may see a guy working on a parking lot or whatever. And he may have a tool that he's using. I say, golly, I could use that on this road that I'm doing because I'm having to build 0.6 miles of road. And this is how my mind's working. This is how thinking on purpose works. You see one thing and you apply it to something totally different. I think there's very few ideas, and I may be proven extremely wrong on this. This is my thought process right now. I don't think there's a lot of new ideas left that have not been thought of yet. However, I think that we have the world at our fingertips on solutions that part of this solution and part of this solution can come together to make a new solution, if that makes sense. I wish I could think of a great example of that right off my head. And I've thought tons and tons of these ideas that I just can't come up with exactly one. A lot of technology if we can run GPS and we can track our locations here. That whole thing has been thought through, and we've had GPS for a number of years now, and it's working. But maybe if we wired that GPS to a pilotless lawnmower or something, we laid those boundary lines and we put, I've never heard of that being done, but that absolutely can be done, because that's merging two ideas. You know, I don't know why a lawnmower came to my mind. I have no idea, but that's just, I'm just trying to do this in real time off the cuff. So one thing we used to do, you can create boundaries. We used to work with this GPS equipment a lot when I was farming all those years, and everything was run GPS as auto steer. You hit a button and the tractor steers itself. It keeps it on, you know, on the rows. They're straight rows. They keep us, less than an inch left or right. So our margin of error. How come you couldn't, if you crossed a boundary, it had the capability of shutting the engine down on the tractor? How come you couldn't marry those two ideas to a whole different platform, say like mowing your lawn and rigging up? So I'm just not saying that we ought to all jump into pilotless lawnmowers, but I'm just kind of trying to use that as an example. That's the way that I think that maybe the future, where there's a lot of marrying of ideas to create solutions for a new problem. And I think there's going to be a lot of that done. So going back to another trapping example and using this, and I got one more business example after that. So another trapping example, when I did go to the drags, I was on this coyote line, and I like not to get right up on top of these coyote sets, but you've got to see if you got a coyote. Excuse me one second. My mouth is getting dry. So you got to see if you got a coyote. So it dawned on me, I'm already using drags. You know, I'm setting coyote sets. I'm in the delta. I'm in wide open fields. I can see for a long, long ways off. I started taking binoculars with me, so I'd make my set. Say it's, I don't know, you pick the location. It could be a blind set on a trail coming into a field, or it can be, I'll tell you what, let's use the intersection. Let's say we've got turn roads, just dirt roads that are bordering, they're separating four different fields. Say it looks like a plus from an airplane looking down on it. It's just a typical four-way intersection. Two roads that intersect right there. I'm going to set a coyote trap right there. Say we've got some grass, maybe knee tall kind of sage grass or broom sage that looks kind of comes up on these turn rows some, anything like that. And sometimes it's just not real thick, but it's just kind of be clumpy in here, there, and yonder. What I've done, especially say it's like a twig, we'll see that a lot of times. Sometimes they don't, these farmers won't quite mow the turn rows where they're, all down, and they're not like grown up. You can still drive down them, but got a little bit of vegetation. And so this is what I've done a lot. So especially like if it happens to be on the wood line or something, I'll see these little small saplings that just came up this spring. I mean, they're only, 6-8 months old, something like that. They're maybe 2 foot tall, and they got a few dead leaves on them. I'll take that thing, and with my drags, I got some voids in my drags where the word ugly is written, if you've ever seen them. I'll stick that tall piece of sapling right through there, and I'll cover that whole entire drag up with dirt or debris or whatever's there. But sticking straight up out of it is something that's completely natural, something that's right there. Because here's my problem. Remember, the solution is always found inside the problem. My problem was I couldn't tell if I had a coyote or not, because I was in wide open fields. I'm not using stakes anymore, so he's not giving me a burn circle. He's not standing there. He's going to be off in the bushes somewhere because he's on a drag. But I've got to physically ride right by there close enough that I can see that if that trap gone or is that trap still there. So that's what I was doing. Well, now Well, and this is as simple, it costs zero. It costs not even one single penny. It costs about 3 seconds worth of energy. I take my clippers clip, I clip that that sapling off, I stick it right through these voids, these holes where my letters are and the word ugly and my ugly drags, and it's sticking there now. If I catch a coyote and he's caught, he turns to run, he runs toward the bushes, what's the first thing that's going to happen? He's going to move that drag. That drag is going to bounce on the ground 3 or 4 times, leaving me a great trail of how to find him. But the first thing that's going to happen, he's going to jerk that sapling. That sapling's only stuck in the ground about inch and a half. It's going to be laying flat. That sapling's not going to be there. You'd be amazed, guys, at how far across a field you can see a sapling with a pair of really good binoculars. You can see them a quarter of a mile, maybe more than that a lot of the times. Now I don't have to drive. I can drive to one location and see 4 or 5 traps that are 300-400 yards apart from each other. I mean, it's easily done. I've done that. My most recent trap line that I just pulled a couple of weeks ago, I could do that very thing. I could pull up, it's actually on the side of railroad tracks, and I could see about half a dozen sets right there. And I couldn't see the traps themselves, I couldn't see the dirt patterns themselves, but I could see my indicator. I could see that twig or that sapling or that tuft of grass or whatever I put right there over my drag. And if that was gone, or laid flat on the ground, or was not sticking up just like I left it, then I knew that trap had been messed with. Now I only got to go just to those sets that that have obviously been disturbed. Now, about once every third day or so, I still would like to go just to make sure I hadn't had a coon scratch the dirt off of it, or you know, something crazy like that. Sometimes that'll happen. You'll have an exposed. I think most of the digging that I see here can probably be attributed to raccoons doing that. But at any rate, I run really heavy paying attention because all I'm shooting at is coyotes. But that's getting off on a tangent. What I'm saying is, so once every periodically, I still want to go look just to make sure I hadn't had a scratch. But other than that, It almost made it. We got a 24-hour check rule in Mississippi, so I've got to look at them every 24 hours, but it does not say that I've got to look at them from 5 yards away. I can look at them from 300 yards away, and that for the coyote's benefit, what you gain from a longer check, like the guys out west are able to do, it gains you not disturbing that area. So what happened there? We stacked functions. We found the solution in the problem. And we thought about that on purpose, and that we freed our mind up by, you know, I could have never done that. I could have never figured that out, and I could never thought of that if I hadn't had my mind freed up enough to start using the drags in the first place. I hope this is making sense, guys, because I'm telling you, it absolutely has changed, you know, who I am and how I think. You know, another trapping example is this, the snare chaser. It's a product that we developed after one bad morning on a coyote line. My buddy in Louisiana, Terry Lynn Jones, is a great snareman down there, catches a ton of coyotes. I was learning some snare techniques from him. I'd ridden from him, taken some instruction from him down there, and you know, wanted to get in the snare. I did not know much about snare. I'm still not a great snareman, but I catch a few and something I've kind of been working on. And so I had one particular location I was on. I think this is 2 years ago when we built the first snare chaser. There was a crossover under a fence. Right immediately adjacent to the fence was a deep ditch that was muddy, wasn't water in it, maybe just 6 inches of water in the bottom of it, not deep but wide. Then a muddy bank, and it comes back up to a spoil bank where at some point in time equipment had been through there digging that ditch out, and then there's a field, if that gives you kind of the idea. But right on top of that spoil bank, there was a trail. The coyotes were coming under the fence, crossing the ditch, just tons of activity there. Through a trail, the trail was obvious, it was right there, it was short grass on there, but all that was muddy until you get about, I don't know, 10 feet away. So what I did, I backed up there with my earth anchor at the time, and I drove an earth anchor, and I had a snare extension cable that was 10 foot. My snare itself, I think, was 6 foot snare. So now I've got 16 feet from the earth anchor. It's all swiveled up really well, but 16 feet from the earth anchor to the end of the loop on my snare. Sure enough, I caught a coyote. Well, he's got, if you really think about that, he's got more than 16 feet to roam. This coyote actually has 32 feet to roam. Because he's got 16 feet radius, now he's got a 32-foot diameter. Well, I get out of the truck and I walk up to him. I get grab my head catcher just like I always do. I got my cable cutters. I'm going to get him out of the snare. I walk up there and I get almost, he's stretched out to the end. I get almost to the end of him. He darts away. He runs to the other side of the whole burn circle. I go to the other side of the burn circle. He darts and he goes back to the other side. And I look like a clown out there. I was so glad nobody was there with a video camera, because it would have been a hilarious act to see. But So I said, there's got to be a better way. Well, my solution then, the way I finally did this after 15 minutes of chasing this crazy coyote around in this burn circle, is I started putting my feet on the snare and walking toward him. And so then I started to see, okay, well, I'm limiting his mobility. He jerks the cable out from under my feet a couple of times. But finally, I think it's kind of like, you know, the battle of working a fish. I tired him out enough, maybe, that I was able to get close enough, and I finally was able to get my head catcher around his neck and get the coyote immobilized and get him out of the snare. I immediately came back, and I built that product we call the Snare Chaser. It's a big, heavy piece of iron on a big, long pole, and it's kind of a swirl design there. I can slide that cable loop right through here. It's a little narrow slot that goes through. It opens in the big lot. It'll slide right over swivels or anything else. So I hook it in the snare, in the long snare right now. I walk straight toward the coyote. Every inch I get to him, he's limited more and more and more his mobility. All I'm saying, that had to happen because you opened your mind. You had to start snaring one time. Then you had to have a situation that you saw a need, a problem. Then the solution's got to lie within that problem. He's on this long 32 feet of property he can roam on. I've got to limit that. There's the solution right there. I got to limit it. So how do I limit it? I got to have my mind open enough. I got to build a tool. You know, this is what my goals are. This is what my needs are. I've got to limit it. So when your mind starts working along these ideas and along these lines, you'll get to where it becomes the way you even think. Now, this does not happen overnight. This is something that's a process that you got to go through, and you got to learn how it works and how it happens. And there's going to be trials and there's going to be errors, and not every one of those is going to be wins. But sooner or later, with effort and you put toward this, you will win and you will get there. And you will, I'm telling you, it's just so liberating when, you know, it's not, you don't have to live by the old status quo. It does not have to go that way. You know, I mean, every situation is different. I completely understand that. But when you get to thinking like this and thinking that, you know, with this whole logic and this whole mindset, and you approach every situation like this, it just seems like I personally, and maybe nobody else is, but I'm so much more open-minded and more clear-headed and can make more rational decisions, that's just incredible. Well, I got on this new property and kind of changed the subject. This is going to be the last example. This is going to be a business example, and I'm going to get ready to close this up. But I do want to go through this, and I know Clint goes through this numbers thing that happened to be sitting here with a calculator. This is just so cool, I think, and I actually do want to run through this. This place I bought, you know, it's big enough I'm going to build a house on, and it's got a little bit of acreage, but I'm at the end of a long, winding road that was just... It was a logging trail, is what it was. And the place was logged and was completely clear cut 14 and a half years ago. So I've got, you know, almost 15 years of natural regeneration hardwoods coming back. It's too far along to kill it and start over, but it's the old place has just been neglected. It's absolutely been neglected. When I first looked at it, you literally could not even ride a four-wheeler back there. You couldn't hardly even walk through it. I looked at it one day. It's got a real pretty lake on it. And that's where the big draw was. But I was so concerned about the other acreage and how we were going to get roads in there and all that. I even put briar britches on, and that, like, if you're a quail hunter or you know what briar britches are, and the, you know, the heavy pants that shed the briars and stuff, and say, at any rate, that's, and I'm still cut up even after doing that and walking all day on those roads, because there just were no, what used to be roads were no roads, and I wound up having to take, you know, topo maps and find the ridges. And anyway, long story short, we started getting roads in there, and I saw real quick that I was going to need a lot of equipment. I was going to need a bulldozer for a long time. I was going to need an excavator for a long time. So there went the search to, I figured I'm going to need this track hoe, especially. I'm going to key on the track hoe because I can do so much cleaning up on these roads and these places. And I know this is doesn't sound like it's trapping, guys, but I promise you, I'm going to draw the circle here closed momentarily. You're going to see this. Because it can go straight into trapping, even though this is a business example. It's still an example of thinking on purpose and learning how to think and how you do that. So I got to check in on Tracco Rentals, and pretty much everywhere I checked, you could rent a Tracco anywhere in my market where I'm at, maybe different parts of the country, but around $6,000 is kind of the average. I found a few for $5,500, and you had to buy the insurance from them, and you had to pay the haul and all that. I found a few that had all that included for $6,800 or whatever, but let's just use $6,000 for a good round number, which is what you're going to pay just about anywhere in my market here. And I researched this in depth. So $6,000, I think I'm going to need this track hoe for probably about 4 months. That's $24,000. I thought maybe I could get done with it in three months. So 6,000 times 3 months is 18,000. You know, anyway, I got to looking around and I started talking to the dealerships that rent them and the rental places that rent them and all this. And what I came up with was there was a deal that I happened to find, and I was looking for other options, which has everything to do with thinking on purpose, is exploring your options, taking the time to research the problem. Remember, the solution is always going to be in the problem itself. And so I stepped back, I looked at this, and I found a lease. It's a 12-month lease on a track code. And the lease was $24,000. And I said, I got to thinking, I said, well, golly, you know, I know I don't need this thing but 3 months, but what is that per month? What's $24,000 divided by 12 months? Because it's a 12-month lease, 1-year lease. That's only $2,000. So instead, I could either pay somebody $6,000 a month for a rental and have it month to month, or I could rent this thing for the whole entire year and maybe be at the same money. If it took me 4 months, then I'm at the exact same money. You know, 4 months times $6,000 a month is $24,000. The whole entire 1 year long lease was $24,000 on the same exact month, but it gets better. Now I got to question this guy. I said, well, what happens if I don't need it? He said, you can do whatever you want with it. He said, so long as you keep your insurance on it and have your payments made. I said, so I can rent this out. He said, absolutely you can. I said, does it have to be my operator on it? Can I rent it? He said, no, you can rent this out to whoever you want to. So here's my plan. And I may wind up eating my words here. None of this may happen. So I still think it's going to take me, I get all my work done with 4 months. I might get done in 3 months, but just say that I'm going to keep it, just say 5 months, okay? So that's going to leave me 7 months for sure. And I've got an extra month. I don't think that I will need it. But let's just say I got 7 months to rent this out. Well, if I've got $2,000 a month in it now, because I've already paid him the $24,000 for the whole year, anybody else that rents this, it's going to cost them $6,000 a month. So how come I can't rent it for, say, $4,500? I think I would have no trouble renting it out because that's still $1,500 a month less than the guy that's renting it is going to be able to get it anywhere else. But I'm making, I'm making $2,500 on top of what I'm already paying. So 7 months times my $4,500. Now I've got an income just from renting it out for those 7 months for $31,500. Remember, I only paid $24,000 for this thing to start with. So $31,500, I think was that number, less $24,000. I just profited $7,500 right there. So I basically, and not only did I profit $7,500, but I also profited $7,500 while I used this track hoe for nothing. I got all my work done. I built all my roads in and out of my property, all my side roads, all the roads, and this is so fun because I can create my intersections. So I'm thinking long term, and I'm designing, I'm thinking on purpose about how I make my roads and how I make my intersections so that I can come back some of them are my main roads that will eventually be my driveway to my new house. But some of them are also access roads that go from one hollow that's a thicket up on top of a ridge, and I'm seeing bobcat location, or I'm thinking coyote locations later on, but I've got to access it. So I'm going to create these roads that are going to be advantageous for my trapping later on. And, so the problem was, golly, I don't know that I can afford to go rent. And this is a brand new machine, so there's no repairs. They're responsible for all the repairs, 100% warranty, all this. So this is thinking on purpose. This is researching your... I just love that example because this is exactly what I'm trying to say. Because if you free yourself up enough and you free your mind up where you can think and you learn how to think. And trappers are so good about this. Trappers are common sense kind of people, down to earth. And most trappers are of this mindset to a certain degree anyway. But to fine tune that, and I think I was too to a certain degree, but to really open my mind up and really start living by those is just a really, 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 cool thing. We're not taught in school to think anymore. I know I can remember some of my fondest days when I was a late teenager, was hanging out with my granddad and he got pretty nostalgic in his later years there, but he was born right at the turn of the century. And he was, he'd talk about some of, so he was a teenager, in the late 19-teens, young man in the 1920s, lived right through the Depression in his young adulthood and all that stuff. And he's been a lot of places and seen a lot of things. And I remember thinking about that. They only went to school through the eighth grade, but what he was telling me that they learned in the eighth grade was stuff that they don't teach our high school seniors now. They don't teach us in freshmen, juniors, seniors in college, don't even learn what these guys were learning back then. And it's so common sense approach. And so I think that's what a lot of trappers have and a way that we kind of, look at things. It just kind of from that, I don't know what the right mindset is, that more common sense approach, I guess, is what you would say. And that's not taught anymore. And I think that's the reason that's such a lost art and a dying thing. It may be the reason that I love trapping so much is because it is so full of common sense approaches and common sense thought processes. And when I learned to shape my whole entire mind and thinking patterns and on to this, I think that's really, to me, it is... The ability to think and the ability to concisely think and to practice that is second only in life to relationship with your family, your immediate family, and God. I think it is that important. One thing I guess that it kind of comes to mind. I haven't listened to him in years, but I used to listen to Dave Ramsey all the time on talk radio. And he kind of closed his shows with, I think one thing he always says, the only way to financial peace is to know the Prince of Peace. So that's kind of, the same kind of thing to him. He was all about common sense approach to money and how that was just like right in line, right second to relationship to God. And I kind of almost think that's the same thing. If you have a problem with that one, you can contact me too. I can help you through that as well, and would love to. But the thinking is that important to me. So I'm going to close up. One thing that I was doing, I mentioned that YouTube channel two or three times. Kind of another phrase. I mentioned Dave Ramsey's phrase, but another phrase that I've heard. I kind of borrowed this from an aviation site that I visit a lot of times. But this is what I started closing, especially the later YouTubes I've been shooting, because I really, really like this saying. I'm going to close Trapper Radio with this. What I've been saying at the end of those videos is a smart trapper is always learning. I really think that. I really believe that. I think the more you see, the more you can learn. And learning is fun. And fun is why we trap. So, what makes it fun is being able to learn all the time. And just be... just be open-minded. Guys, I appreciate the chance to hang out with you. Clint will be back next week for 199, and then we'll see what he has in store for us all on 200, on Trapper Radio episode 200. But I've enjoyed hanging out with you for Trapper Radio 198. Good luck to you, and take care, and learn. I'm sure you do. Not necessarily learn how to think. You know how to think, but fine-tune that. Think on purpose and make this thing work for you. It's really changed my life, and I know it can for you too. Guys, I appreciate it a bunch. Good luck to you. Talk to you soon.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. Is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those winning old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. Came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beech nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive.